populace still up in these states, and they're being impacted right along with. You have a number of Republicans who own homes on Martha's Vineyard.
Well, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Professor Mwalim Peters of English and Black Studies at University of Massachusetts Dartmouth, also Commissioner for the Barnstable County Human Rights Advisory Commission, member of the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe, speaking to us from Cape Cod. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook, broadcasting on 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as all over the world on WUSB.FM. It's just about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening, which means it's time once again for another edition of Off the Wall. By the program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Wilson here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle,
Hi, how's it going?
Oh, boy. It's going all right. It's you know, I'm better now. I got to tell you, the Brits, boy, they know emotion. They know sadness. They know ceremony. Oh, my God. I was a wreck yesterday after the royal funeral. I know it sounds silly to people listening here in this country. How could you get all swept up in this? But I did. I think we both did.
Certainly, I felt a deep, you know, pride in the way they carried themselves throughout this whole ceremony, this week long tradition. The line of the viewing. I mean, you empathize. People take great pride, and they know their story, and there's so much that this means to them,
mm-hmm.
and people just sort of looking out for one another and figuring out what it will all mean now,
uh-huh.
and to each and every one of them.
Well, you know, it's when we first heard the news back on the 8th of September, I think we both knew it was going to be huge. It was going to be a really, really big deal. In fact, I think we knew about this well before it happened. I mean, we knew the day was coming. You know, she was 96 years old. And that's something that I think a lot of people here in America don't seem to understand. They're like, how can you mourn someone who's 96? You know, she obviously wasn't going to last much longer. But I think they're missing the whole point of just the attachment that developed. Because keep in mind, this was somebody that had the same position for 70 years. 70 years. I mean, I can't even conceive of that. As queen, you know, and never mind how you feel about monarchy or their system. It's their system, okay? Deal with it. It's something that they value, and they certainly do value it. It's a part of their history. We can talk more about that. But to have someone who was in the same position for 70 years, regardless of how old they were, to have them just gone, it's a tremendously emotional thing. And it's... You mentioned the lines, and yes, oh my God. I'm still trying to figure out what affected me the most, but seeing all those people lining up for so many hours just for a brief moment by the casket where they could have maybe 5-10 seconds to bow their heads or salute or just stare for 5 seconds. To stand in line for, some people stood in line for 24 hours. It was more like 12, 13 hours for most people, but it was up to above a full day.
That is just a logistical and personal endurance race, I think. Just keeping going, but there's so much passion and motivation to stay there and be there at that moment.
I mean, you know, I feel kind of envious that there's nothing in this country where we would line up for that long period of time without getting something tangible in return, you know, like concert tickets or a pair of sneakers or something like that. It's not the same thing. This is just so you could pay your respects. Just, you know, something that, you know, it's a moment. You've sacrificed your entire day. But it's something you feel you have to do, and all these people around you feel the same thing. We don't have anything in this country that can bring us together like that, and that's sad. You know, again, regardless of how you feel about, I don't want to say that in front of everything I say tonight, regardless of how you feel about the monarchy, whatever. It doesn't matter how you feel about the monarchy. It's not your country. It's their country. Clearly, a hell of a lot of people are enthralled and supportive. And certainly during this week, you know, let's respect that. So, for people to just invest so much time and to be so together with so many other citizens of their nation, that to me is a tremendous gift. It really is. And again, you know, there's nothing that we can experience in this country, nothing at all that would match that. And there is no political leader in the UK, I think, that could evoke that kind of a response. And that should tell you something. Because, you know, when someone is in power, in true power, elected, they have their opponents. They have people that are campaigning to get them out of office. So if the same fate were to, follow any of those people, yeah, there'd be sadness. There'd be a state funeral, perhaps, but you wouldn't have the same outpouring, the same universal outpouring. And I know it's not completely universal, but it certainly is more universal than I think anything else could possibly be. So that is something that is, I think, a once-in-a-lifetime event for any of us to witness, because I don't think King Charles is going to get the same kind of reaction. It will be, you know, something fairly similar, at least in a ceremonial sense, but she was beloved. She was really somebody that everybody kind of felt a kinship to. Like, she was your grandmother. She was just this gentle woman that, you know, got things done and persisted and was devoted. You know, 1952 was when she took, you know, the title. And it's not like she didn't do anything. She basically was a constant. We mentioned last week her tremendous efforts to bring peace to Ireland, Northern Ireland. It made a difference. It wasn't nothing. It was a lot. And I just feel that people who weren't paying attention, who didn't have the BBC on all the last couple of weeks, you may have missed out. And it's not too late, because it's all on YouTube. You can witness it. But just to see those emotions and the sharing and, dare I say, the happiness as well, because they were celebrating her life. They were celebrating history. And that's something else, you know. Watching the interviews with people who are online, they interviewed kids many times, little kids, you know, 8 years old, who were saying, this is history. We're not going to see this again. You know, an eight-year-old saying, I'm not going to see this again, and saying that we have to embrace history as something that that is important. How do you get kids here to say that? How do you get kids to embrace history? Well, you have to make it interesting. You have to make it interesting. And that's one thing you can say about the monarchy, is that it's interesting. It's fascinating. That's why you have the crown. You know, that's why you have Game of Thrones, because it's all modeled after this. And when something is interesting, kids will follow it. When something is interesting, people will remember it. I think almost everyone I know in the United Kingdom can tell me kings and queens going back at least a few centuries. And I struggle to name all the presidents going back to 1950, but I think it's just more interesting, something that they feel a kinship to, and that's why it lasts. That's why it's still here. And again, we can talk about what role should it play, but I don't think it's going to disappear. I don't think it's going to disappear at all. There's always going to be some link to that, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. There's all kinds of history, and that needs to be addressed and confronted in many ways, but there's also the present. And you can't ignore the present, you can't ignore the future, and you can't stop trying to influence that. Now, Queen Elizabeth actually did some good things with regards to that. I believe she was the one who changed the line of, what's it called again, where you inherit the throne? Not procession.
The line to the throne?
Inheritance. What do they call it when somebody... okay, you forget too. It's basically, she made it possible for females to also inherit the throne. I know there's another phrase for it, but neither one of us can think of it right now. The line of succession, that's it. In the past, only males could do that. You know, males had to be first, but right now you have, I can't believe you even know this, Prince William I'm forgetting their names.
Prince William is the heir.
Prince William is the heir, but who's his kid? Oh, George, that's it.
George.
Prince George, Prince William's kid, he stands to inherit the throne after King William, who will inherit the throne after King Charles. But after, Prince George, his sister, Princess Charlotte, will inherit the throne, rather than going to his younger brother, whose name I forget. So that's one of the things that I believe Queen Elizabeth was...
Louis.
You know his name? Louis?
Louis.
Prince
yeah.
Louis?
Louis, I think.
Yeah. What the hell kind of name is that for a prince? Okay, well, whatever. So she made the subtle changes, and you know, when you're a member of the royal family, you might not have as much power as you think you do. But
well,
she was, you know, somebody who made her presence known.
Well, I think that there is a certain purpose. It does serve that this isn't the only monarchy in the world, and I think that to speak on those terms, the United Kingdom is going to maintain their monarchy. I mean, the outpouring alone tells you that it has some fixture. It may be something that transforms and changes in how we how it appears, mm-hmm. or how it's functioning day to day. But that's a mechanism, a part of their government and of course the history of their state. So yeah, to expect it to just go away all at once because it will just never be anything like what it was under Queen Elizabeth, I think is a bit foolish, and it's very early to I think draw a bunch of conclusions and make assumptions about how everything will go.
Mm-hmm.
A lot has shifted, and yeah, there's a lot of younger people that will eventually step up and probably continue to guide from that perspective and from that part of the empire.
If the monarchy can change with the times, I think there will still be very much a place for it in British society.
That's what I mean, like speaking to other nations and that kind of soft diplomacy and uh-huh. just goodwill and setting initiatives. And
King Charles had a good history of activism, you know, of causes that were, you know, for the good. He can't do that now, obviously, as king, but it's still there. You know, his work is still there. It'll be passed on to somebody else. And the royal family embracing these things does send a message, and it does have an effect. And you know what Prince Harry did by basically saying, "I don't want to be a part of this anymore." That sends a message as well. It's, you know, he's still part of the family, but he's not part of the whole monarchy system, and that's fine. And he shouldn't have to endure all the crap that he's enduring as a result of making that decision. But that is part of the transformation, and I see more of that happening in the years ahead. Now, King Charles is not going to be as popular as Queen Elizabeth. There's just no way. I don't see how you can ever compete with a 96-year-old grandmother. And we're not likely to see another queen for a very, very long time, unless there's some kind of, you know, Game of Thrones like. I'm not gonna even speculate about that. But I do want to talk about a couple of other things. Like, for instance, if we're going to talk about Game of Thrones, I just want to read you something from one of their pages from, I think, fandom.com. We're talking about the House I'm going to pronounce it wrong, and I'm going to get letters. I know it. House, I got to do this right, Valyrian. Valyrian? Is that how you say it? Valyrian?
Valyrian.
Yeah, but there's no I there. That's why I'm not saying Valyrian. Valyrian of Valyrian. Driftmark. But it's a noble house of Valyrians, and there is an I there. You see?
Okay, so it's
Valyrian. Valyrian. Okay, now how do you do this? You know, you're controlling. You're controlling the universe here, and you're Valyrian. Making two names that are so similar to each other.
Valyrian.
And they're the same people.
Valyrian.
Yeah, but read the two.
House Valyrian origins.
Read the next one.
Reach back to old Valeria.
Yeah, now say the two words next to each other.
Valyrian. Valeria.
Yeah, you see, that's what I'm talking about. But there are people out there, kids, who know the difference and will get very passionate about this. Now, it's the noble house of Valyrians in the Crown Lands, one of the few houses of the Seven Kingdoms, besides the Targaryens that originated in Essos. They ruled Driftmark, an island in Blackwater Bay, located west of Dragonstone. Their seat, High Tide, is located on a small island off the coast of Driftmark. There are people who know all this in their heads. They don't need a webpage. There's maps. There's maps, and they can point to things, and they could show you how to get from one to the other. This is fantasy. I'm sorry, don't mean anything by it, but it is fantasy. It's not real. But they know it better than the real things because it's more interesting. That's the point I'm making, that, you know, you can create a world and really enthrall people with it, and they'll know all the history, they'll remember it. But you ask them, you know, they'll know how to find Driftmark on a map, but they can't find Denmark on a map. And I guarantee that's true. So let's make our history more interesting. And that's what, you know, one thing you can say about the United Kingdom is their history is pretty interesting. In many ways. Is there a cricket in here?
Yeah, I think the we may be harboring some guest crickets.
Okay. Whose idea was that?
It was unintentional. Yeah, I'm actually working on some stuff with the pest control cat, but they're away.
Okay, speaking of, as soon as you stop talking, the cricket stops making noise. I just want to capture the cricket on the microphone, if that's even possible. I hear her in my ears, but I don't know if the microphone's picking him up or her. Total quiet now. Total quiet. Wow. This is an interesting time of year because the katydids are starting to get quieter, and the crickets are now coming. So it's a transition. And before late July, you don't even hear the katydids, and it's quiet at night. But people come here, and they think it's the tropics, all the noise outside at night.
Yeah, some people might have frogs where you live, or all kinds of other animals that make noises. If there's a particular noise that you hear this time of year, or you're hearing emerge from other noise, please write us at otw@2600.com.
That's our email address. Off the Wall is the show. WUSB is the station. And the first quarter of the 21st century is the timeline. 21st century, right? I'm in the right century?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Speaking of interesting weirdness that follows a story like this, the Brits have names for everything. Like, for instance, the Sovereign Scepter. Am I saying that right? The Sovereign Scepter.
I was thinking scepter, but...
Scepter? It's spelled S-C-E-P-T-R-E. So, I'm sorry.
I think it's a silent C.
A silent C. Oh, my goodness.
It's not your language.
It's English, for God. What is my language?
It's the British English. It's the King's English.
Yeah, that's clearly the King's English. He even owns the language.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's another thing. They have Old Valyrian on Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. It's a language that you speak. You know, and people know the language. They know the language. And they can't speak English, I'll bet. It's King's English, it is. Anyway, the Sovereign's Scepter is used in coronations. It's there's a Sovereign's Orb. There's all kinds of things that you might, you know, just think is, you know, a table has a totally different name. But there's one object that I noticed being used throughout the viewing, where all the people were coming to see the Queen. You had these guards, the guards with the big puffy hats. They're called Welsh guards sometimes, but they're not always Welsh guards. They have things that you can put little insignias on the side of those hats. I didn't know you could do that. And that indicates, you know, what bus you're on, I guess, or something like that.
Yeah, I think they're the Grenadier.
Okay, fine. They could be that, sure. But I want to play some audio from the viewing, where everybody, hundreds of people are just filing past the casket, but occasionally they have a changing of the guard, and the guys with those hats basically make a sound to indicate that the changing of the guard is about to begin. Let's listen. Yeah, they bang their staff, their
wand.
I don't know if wand is the right word, but basically, you know, they have an impressive word for that thing that they bang on the ground just to say, hey, we need to do something now. Two means changing of the guard. I think three means we have some important people coming through. But you know what they call it? They call it a stick. The the naming committee did not meet that night, apparently. It's a stick. Yeah, they bang a stick on the floor. And that's... It's just this amazing mixture of complexity and simpleness.
Right, it seems like very ancient.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we're going to clap it. But when we look at some of our proceedings and in...
Sorry, we have to do something now? Okay.
Sorry,
No, that means it's time for the other guards to start moving in. No, I mean, but okay. that gets your attention. It's like somebody, you know, who's bedridden who wants soup. You know, they bang on the floor.
Something like
that.
Yeah,
it's the same basic idea. Maybe that's where it came from.
Well, anyway, I'm saying it's very similar to the gavel, right, that you would see in a court.
Yes.
Or in Congress.
But that's called a gavel. That's a good name. This
right.
This is just a stick. I mean, come on, they could do better than that. They could come up with a much better name than stick. It's like fly. Like, why is an insect called a fly? It doesn't... Anyway, so that's just something I thought we should...
Well, it could have been a buzzer, right? Mm-hmm. You know, how annoying would that be? Like, a loud chirping, like, beep? Just beep.
I'm glad they didn't modernize it so that there's some kind of a ding-dong, like a subway car closing or... Yeah, you don't want that. No, I like the links to the past because they've probably been banging on the floor, probably that same floor, Westminster Hall, for many centuries. So why would they change anything now?
Yeah, it seems like the building, too, begets that particular purpose. Like, it is bringing that out of the people still using the space to this very day.
Mm-hmm.
And by looking at how it was used, we carry on the roles or observe them. And I just see so many parallels to some of the things we do. But I recognize your critique that it's just nothing like it.
It's not critique. It's just I'm surprised. I'm surprised there isn't a more elegant name for that trusty. I said staff. Come on, staff is a good word. You could use that. I know there's other ones.
But those names may be attached to other ceremonial tools, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the stick really speaks to this particular purpose. So if you say a staff, that might be something that is used in, like, a religious procession.
And stick isn't used anywhere else?
Some ceremonial guard position.
Come on, every little kid has a stick that they wave around. No, it's... make up a word then. You know, borrow something from France.
Fancy
I don't know.
Stick. Or special stick.
Look, it's not my place to say that England should rename this, but I just think... this is one thing where they could improve.
The bonking stick.
Okay, now we're just getting silly and perhaps disrespectful. But it was cool to watch that. And there were all these myriad of little tiny details that you would notice if you were watching this. I was, you know, just the media alone I was so enthralled with as far as just watching the change. From the very beginning, we talked about this last week, where all the BBC channels basically stopped what they were doing, had a black and white news report page that just showed up, and then the news announcer read the official announcement from Buckingham Palace. And what happened from that point is that the main BBC news channel, BBC One and the news channel in the UK and BBC World News outside, basically turned itself over to this story and this story pretty much alone. There were other stories occasionally, but at least for the first few days, there was nothing else. Announcers dressed in dark suits. There was no red banner like there usually is on those channels. It turned to sort of a dark gray. And even they have a countdown on the hour to count down when a new news cycle will begin. Even that was made to sound sad. It was all done so well.
Much slower.
Much slower, yeah. And you just felt sad. And then they'd show images of what happened that day while they were counting down. And you realize you're witnessing history. Like that little kid said, you're witnessing history.
Yeah, mixed in with a production house or whatever it is mm-hmm. there in London. It was really stirring to see this transformation and the coverage basically like a river of media and information just flowing one way and then changing directions completely and going out with this huge, huge event
mm-hmm.
that, I don't know, they must have had thousands of different cameras. And when it really culminated the last couple of days. It was with the funeral. It was really just amazing how much coverage there was up to that. And yeah, I don't know. Just the simple, subtle changes and the lowered like tone. Everybody was speaking very calmly about it, and it really was a total shift. A lot of personalities from shows that maybe if you watch the channel you would have seen other places mm-hmm. were out there as correspondents.
Yeah, yeah.
Wearing the same dark clothing, you know, adhering to this this very somber broadcast format that just came in, and people have been, as you said, just around the world, glued to watching from afar and witnessing what the United Kingdom's going through, what's happening there.
Yeah, it was done with such style. It really was, and such respect. And, you know, it went on for a while. You know, like I said, it started on the 8th. It's now, what, the 20th? And, yeah, to us here in America, that's really over the top. They have another week of mourning for the royal family after this. But while we don't have the equivalent of Queen Elizabeth, and we never will, you do have people in your life that matter. And, yeah, you won't get the entire world to care as much, to show up, to remember. But you can, you know, and the people around those people, they can care, and people can care about you. And if we show that kind of appreciation and reminiscing about ourselves as individuals, I think that's enough. You know, I think that's sufficient. Sure, it's not going to be Queen Elizabeth because of all the history and the monarchy and tradition and all that. It shouldn't be. All right, we as normal everyday people can show the same amount of respect, the same amount of value in those around us, and that is just as important. The whole world won't join you, but that shouldn't matter. You know, it's more intimate. It's about us. It's about who we are. And this was just an opportunity, pretty much a once in a lifetime opportunity for so many people to share something together. And it was just beautiful to see that. It really was. And I got to say, you know, there were so many different little ceremonies. There was the moving of the, I mean, it was unusual because she died in Scotland, so they had to move the casket to an airport, I think Aberdeen, and go by car, was it? And basically people lying along the street, then onto an airplane, then through the streets of London, then into Buckingham Palace, then down to Westminster Hall. And along the way, all these people basically just waving and throwing flowers. And there was the one part where the family was walking behind the casket as it was being transferred from one place to another in London. That was hugely emotional as well, just seeing that slow walk. And what a great way to pay tribute to somebody, to do that, to see the family out there, you know, under the sky for everyone to see in their grief, in their sadness. And then, oh, my God, the funeral, when that happened after 4 full days of viewing, that was simply like nothing I'd ever seen, where basically a huge service at Westminster Abbey, then the walk over to the Arch at Hyde Park, Wellington Arch. I'm remembering all these things because they matter. Wellington Arch. I would not have remembered that otherwise.
Through the horse gate to Wellington Arch.
Yeah. And then into a car which drove, and there's still people lined up along the 22-mile drive up to Windsor, Windsor Castle, where she spent most of her time and where she was eventually going to be buried. And then down the long walk, which a couple of years ago on this show, we did the long walk. It took 2 shows to do the long walk. That's how long it is. And to see that familiar pathway, it's just this huge straight pathway that goes to the castle, to see so many people lined up, you know, watching and waving and showing their respect. And, you know, I lost it when the horse was there. you know, her pony, you know, that she rode earlier in the year, I heard, just to have that pony there. You know, obviously the pony's not grieving or watching, but it's a symbol. It's a symbol, and it tears you apart. And then to see her, you know, two of her dogs doing the same thing, it mattered. It meant something. And I feel for the people who, you know, felt emotion for that. And I honestly feel sorry for the people who didn't or didn't give themselves an opportunity to feel something, because these moments don't come on this scale very often at all.
Yeah, the animals that were greeting the entourage of funeral procession and stuff was touching, and I think also the music really got me. There was a lot of pipes.
Oh yeah,
and
that,
bands.
When the I'm gonna lose it here. The bagpiper in the church, just walking down the hallway, getting fainter and fainter and fainter, then gone. I mean, wow! I've never seen anything like that before. You know, the symbolism there, just it's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable.
Yeah, that coverage is really important because we were able to see those visuals and those different activities that are going on there, and we'll have it for all time to reminisce about. But yeah, the choirs, the amazing hymns that were chosen and stuff, and all of the drums and the sights and sounds, you know, as it were, and then little details like those animals that reflect her personality. The way the floral arrangements were collected at Buckingham.
Oh yeah.
And turned into a display on the lawns.
I don't know how they did this. All these people, they're dropping flowers everywhere. But what they did at Windsor was gardeners or guards or somebody. They were able to line them up along the side of the road, and the announcers were saying they were making patterns of them, but basically it looked like they were flat on the ground, and it just went on for a mile.
Yeah, it was very evenly spaced, and I'm wondering if they sorted them by color and then deliberately arranged them. I don't know how they did it, but it was just this amazing uniform floor of color, like just pattern, right, right along the roadway there.
This is why you always have a good gardener.
They can
do amazing things. They really
yeah,
can.
It's a big deal, and that was all these different contributions of people who were paying respects. It's so big, and seems minor, but it just those little details are really
those
really
are the ones
important.
That mean the most. The ones that seem minor.
Yeah.
Really matter more than anything. I can't explain it, but it just does. It tugs at your heartstrings, and it's something that brings you together with others. For instance, the crown always being on her casket throughout everything until the end when they lifted it up and put it on the shelf. And
the altar, I think, is
okay. See, that's my American.
The term.
They call it the altar. I call it the shelf. So yeah,
it's in the cupboard. Yeah,
it's a better word. And then at the end, when they took the, I want to say pool cue, but that's not the right word. What is it? This is where my ignorance comes in. Some guy was there who served under the Queen, and his final act was to snap the pool cue in two. You don't know what it's called?
I thought it was a stick, too.
It's not a stick. No, the stick is the other thing. Wand. It was a wand. Yeah, because you said wand before.
It was a wand.
This is a wand.
People were making fun of it. They were like making Harry Potter.
Yeah, it didn't have a star. It didn't have a star at the end. But no, he snapped it in half, put it on top of the casket, and it gets buried with her.
But it's representative of her reign, and the breaking of it is symbolic of the official end.
Yeah. Again.
By the herald.
Never saw anything like that before. Very few miscues, very few things that went wrong.
There were so many opportunities.
The ones that did, though, got all kinds of press. For instance, King Charles and the pens. Okay, you know, the first time he was signing some document, and he was basically trying to... He seems to have some kind of existing relationship with pens, because he was kind of motioning for somebody and making this grimacing face to get the pens out of his way so he could sign something. And, of course, they did.
On the comically large documents.
Oh, ridiculously
blotters,
large. Yeah. But also there were two trays with pens in them. I don't know what they're for. And then there was another ceremony in a different place where the pens started leaking on him and Queen Consort, Camilla?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
See, I know these things now. You just see him get angry, like really proper angry. You know, like every bloody time this happens. That's
I
can identify. And, of course, the media is all over it saying, oh, he lost his cool. Good for him. Lose your cool every now and then. It's good to freak out. If you bottle all in, then that's bad. And you know, too many people do that. So, by all means, just don't lob off anyone's head. But that's another good thing. They don't do that anymore in the monarchy. But, you know, they did. And we should definitely confront that painful part of the past. I want to study more. Maybe I'll start watching The Crown now, but I want to know more about the history. I heard one king got executed. How do you execute a king? That's something I'm curious about. I just want to know. I'm curious.
You're asking for a friend, or?
I mean, was it an ex-king, or it's good for future reference. Let's put it that way. And no, not Charles or anything like that. I'd like to know. I'd like to know how these things come about. How do you execute a king? I mean, a king is the top, you know, top ranking person. I always thought. What else? Any other? Okay, there was this. This actually made the papers. A piece of paper stole the spotlight at the Queen's funeral. Okay, you see, this is a typical American way of dealing with it. Of course, it comes from Entertainment Weekly. What do you expect? It didn't steal the show, okay? I think the nine-hour funeral stole the show. But, yeah, somebody dropped a piece of paper. Wow. Okay, it was interesting. I pointed it out to you. I'm going to read what they say. Forget the crown jewels and the mourners, because that's what we do. Queen Elizabeth's funeral was all about a piece of paper. Really, that's how you want to start your story, by saying that the biggest funeral in our lifetimes is about a piece of paper that fell on the floor. These are the people we're surrounded with. You know, it's
pretty shallow.
Early in the ceremony, a bishop shuffled a stack of papers in his hands, accidentally dropping one of them on the ground. It fluttered out of his hand to the decorative floor of Westminster Abbey, landing noticeably near the Queen's casket. I pointed out to you. Say, look, Kyle, that piece of paper fell on the floor.
Yeah, I saw it.
But I didn't dwell upon it after that. I did notice that it disappeared at some point.
I was surprised you didn't grab it.
Well,
right away.
I was thinking the bishop might go and get it himself, but, you know, you don't really see bishops bend over and pick things up often. It's not part of the job description, I don't think. The paper quickly seized the public imagination, sparking a Twitter account. They made a Twitter account for this, and a fake Netflix series. Yeah. The Twitter account uses the handle Funeral Paper with the display name Papergate, and a user bio that reads, will I pick it up or won't I? What is on my paper? So many questions, not enough answers. The account also promoted the fictional Netflix series, posting an image of the paper near the casket with a title card reading The Paper and the branding of a Netflix original series. The post jokes that the show will debut in January 2023 on the streaming platform. The moment itself quickly went viral, with social media creating slow-mo footage of the drop and tweeting about the incident. Kind of reminds me of The Fly on Pence. But that was something different. You know, nobody noticed the spider on the piece of paper that was actually on the casket. You know,
on the floral arrangement.
Yeah, the floral arrangement, the note from King Charles. But if you go back before the paper incident, you'll see at some point there's a spider on that piece of paper. It's probably within 15 minutes, I would say. And nobody's talking about that. I'm the only person that noticed that, I think.
Well, now it's in a vault, so.
Well, I don't think it's a perfect place
for a spider.
Oh, okay, but that was very early in the ceremony. Spiders can definitely get out of the way before. Don't worry about him. He's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, that's enough about the royal wedding, since our show's almost over now.
Wedding? Oh,
my God, I can't believe I said that. Royal funeral. Well, I want royal wedding to be the default thing I say if I'm going to say royal, not funeral. But you know what there's going to be next year is a royal coronation. Yeah, they have to install Charles. He's basically hasn't quite been configured yet.
So they, like, yeah, open the package and they have all the instructions out. And they're trying to install him,
mm-hmm.
Get it configured properly.
And there's some other thing they have to do to the Prince of Wales, which is William now. It begins with an I. I'm sorry. Again, my ignorance is showing. It's a word like insurrection, except it doesn't mean that at all.
Induction?
I think it might. No, it's not induction. No, it's not induction, but it's like induction. It's some other word. And basically, Prince Charles, it happened 10 years after he was named Prince. So I don't know if they're going to do that with William. If they're going to wait 10 years or if it's something that they do quickly.
I have no idea what the word is.
And obviously, I don't either. Okay, so meanwhile, back in this country, let's see what we have here. Okay, former President Trump appeared to more fully embrace QAnon Saturday, playing a song at a political rally in Ohio that prompted attendees to respond with a salute in reference to the cult-like conspiracy theory's theme song. Do you see this? They were all out there with their with their arms outstretched and one finger extended. Okay, so obviously that's very different from your arm outstretched and five fingers extended, or four fingers and a thumb. It's totally different.
Oh, it's in the neighborhood.
It's different, Kyle. It's okay. One finger, not five fingers. So, you know, stop comparing it to Nazis. It's
pretty adjacent, but whatever. Yeah, go on.
I don't want to go on.
You can pretend it isn't.
I've heard enough. I don't want to go on anymore. I want to go back to the royal family. This is... while speaking in Youngstown in support of J.D. Vance, whom he has endorsed as Ohio's Republican nominee for the Senate, Trump delivered a dark address about the decline of America over music that was all but identical to a song called, I'm going to spell this because I don't know how to say it, WWGLWGA, which is an abbreviation for the QAnon slogan, Where We Go One, We Go All. This is all news to me because I didn't know they had a slogan, I didn't know they had a song, and I never heard of WWGLWGA before.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a part of that whole conspiracy group, I guess. I know, like, was it Michael Flynn was pledging to it and running with those hashtags. All the hashtags around that have that that lettering and I don't know anything about the song, but I guess there is some tune that is directly associated
well,
with that.
Well, okay, here's what we know about that. Scores of people in the crowd raised fingers in the air in an apparent reference to the one in what they thought was the song's title. It was the first time in memory such a display occurred at one of his rallies. It's kind of weird all these people did this. And it wasn't like they were just holding up their fingers. They were outstretching their arms and pointing their fingers. They're very scary looking. Aides to Trump said the song played at the rally was called Mirrors, and it was selected for use in a video that Trump played at the conservative meeting CPAC and posted on a social media site, Truth Social, but it sounds strikingly like the QAnon theme song, which I've never heard, don't really want to hear it.
You need to see a comparison.
But spokespeople for Trump are saying the fake news, that's us, in a pathetic attempt to create controversy and divide America.
Oh, no, we don't care.
Is brewing up another conspiracy about a royalty-free song from a popular audio library platform. I don't know why they're upset, but they are. And this is from the New York Times that's reporting this. So call them fake news if you want, but they seem to get the facts right more times than not. That's what's going on over there. And, of course, the special master started meeting today. That Florida judge just gives Trump everything he wants. It's disgusting. And, of course, the Justice Department is appealing to the 11th Circuit, I believe, which has more Trump judges than non-Trump judges. This is wrong. This is such a bad way of doing things. You can't have your appointed judges ruling on something that affects your future. You can say, oh, but they're not supposed to be biased in favor of the person that gave them a job, but they are. They are, and they're proving it. Anyway, the U.S. Judge that was appointed as special master basically raised doubts today about the former president's claim that he should not yet review whether the records are classified or not. In his first public hearing since his appointment as special master, Judge Raymond Deary, serving as an independent arbiter or special master to vet the documents, pressed Trump's lawyers about whether they had any evidence to show Trump declassified the records. Now, as you may know, Trump is under investigation for retaining government records, some marked as highly classified, at the Mar-a-Lago Resort in Palm Beach, which is his home after finally leaving in January 2021. Trump has denied wrongdoing and has said, without providing evidence, that the investigation is a partisan attack. Trump has claimed in social media posts he declassified the records, but his lawyers have not made such a statement in court filings, likely because there's no evidence of anything like that happening. You did bring a lawsuit, Deary told Trump's attorney, James Trustee, after Trustee said the lawyers were not in a position to say the former president declassified the documents until they can first review the records. Deary is a senior federal judge in Brooklyn, and he will help decide which of the more than 11,000 documents seized in the August 8th search at Mar-a-Lago should be kept from the Justice Department's criminal investigation into the former president's handling of the documents. Now, Trump's lawyer, Trustee, great name, told Deary that he believes that Deary's request to provide a declassification defense goes beyond the scope of what Trump's Florida judge told him to do. And Deary said he was taken aback by that claim. I think I'm doing what I'm told, he said. So already they're at loggerheads, and that's good, I guess, but we shouldn't be going through this. We should be investigating. And all of that is on hold right now because of Trump's judge. And, boy, the interpretation of that particular ruling, it's pretty scathing from all legal experts that I've been reading about.
Yeah, it just seems like he's hustling the courts with his judges. I don't think he should wait around and put up with it. So, I don't know, whatever's got to happen appeal-wise. I don't want to feel like I'm just sitting here, you know, where's the evidence? It's over here, it's over there. It's like one of those cup games where you're, like, following stuff around, trying to see where the evidence goes before it's even been adjudicated. It's just like it's just disappearing one way or another, you know, through entanglements with different courts and different venue changes and stuff. I think it's utter waste of time. It's just meant to slow things down. It's insulting our intelligence, and I don't know. It's not a form of justice. I'm really thrilled by it at the moment.
No. I'm running out of time, so I'm just going to read the first paragraph of this New York Times story. Newly released videos show allies of former President Trump and contractors who were working on his behalf handling sensitive voting equipment in a Georgia county weeks after the 2020 election. And they fear that personal information may have fallen into the wrong hands. They copied everything, apparently. So there's that. We also have what's going on now is the relocation of migrants who are in this country legally by racist governors in places like Texas and Florida and Arizona. In fact, there's a criminal investigation now going on in Texas about migrants being lied to and transported far away. Here's what they do. They basically go to these migrants who are here who've basically filed for status in this country. Have been allowed in this country and are basically trying to figure out their next steps. They're being approached by these people that promise them jobs and homes and things like that if they just get on a bus or a plane. And they do. And then, thanks to DeSantis or Abbott or some other idiot, they find themselves far, far away in places that didn't even know they were coming. Like Martha's Vineyard is a good example. And they have nothing. They have no connections. Not only that, and this is the best part, they have a court appointment in the place that they just left that they can't possibly make because now they're far away. So soon they will be in the country illegally. It's so terrible what they're doing. And the way that conservative media is reporting it, saying that liberals are outraged that all these migrants are showing up in their backyard. No, liberals are outraged because of what you're doing to these poor people. Using them as pawns. They're being taken care of well in these places when they arrive. They're, you know, being fed and clothed and, you know. But something has to be done about the people who are instigating this. And in Texas, I'm rather amazed by what Texans are doing. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has widened his lead to 9 percentage points over his Democratic challenger, Beto O'Rourke. They love what he's doing. You know, I hear a lot about how we need to bridge the gap, how we need to get along with people.
Yeah, I can't trust them.
I don't want to get along with people like that.
Nope.
If you think this is a way of treating people, there's some documentaries you need to watch about civil rights, about the Holocaust, about all sorts of things where undesirables were simply sent away, out of mind, out of sight. And that's what you're signing up for. And even by just calling them illegal aliens or some horrible term like that, first of all, you can't describe a person that way. You can't describe the sum of a person's existence as illegal. So there's that. But most ironically, they are here completely legally. They filed the right paperwork, they went to the right people, and now they're looking to improve their lives, and dare I say, improve our lives too, by being a part of our country. So, Texas, get it together. Florida, please, get it together. Arizona, what's wrong with you? Come on. We can do better than this. We are better than this. All right, you know what? We are completely out of time now. Please write to us, otw@2600.com. That's our email address. And send us your opinions, your thoughts, and opinions. I'll see you next week, Kyle.
Yeah. Watch out.
Why?
Next week.
Oh, okay. I thought something was behind me. All right. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
It's not playing. I'm sorry. Can you do another outro?
Well, what I would like to wish.
Okay,
is,
it's working.
What, you just gave me. No, I had the floor. This was good material.
We'll see you next week. Good night. Oh, by the way, when this song makes reference to the Queen, this is 30 years ago, they still called her old. Huh, how about that?